WIX.com.
With fuel prices climbing, you may be rethinking driving that gas guzzler you have. We have the answer. Donate it to the WLRN Vehicle Donation Program. It's easy. Just call 877-WLRN-CAR or go online to WLRN.org. Once we have all of your information, we'll make arrangements to pick up your vehicle. After it's sold, we'll send you all of the paperwork. Put that gas guzzler to work for WLRN. Donate it at 877-957-6227 or online at WLRN.org.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. I hope you had a nice holiday weekend, Bonnie.
Thank you, I did, and you?
And you're back in your chair here, bright and ready to go.
Bright and ready to go, and I hope everyone out there had a nice 4th of July weekend.
Well, today we visit with University of Washington, Seattle Professor Christopher Parker. He's the co-author of Change They Can't Believe In, The Tea Party and Reactionary Politics in America. And he joins us from Public Station KUOW in Seattle. Welcome to you, Professor.
I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Members of the Tea Party claim the movement springs from and promotes basic American conservative principles, such as limited government, fiscal responsibility. What do you conclude from your research and your surveys?
Well, we conclude, my co-author and I, Matt Barreto, conclude that part of that is true, but a part of it's also a facade or a ruse, because they're not all about, you know, traditional conservative values. It's much more complicated than that.
Can you expound on that?
Oh, of course I can. So part of what we were trying to find out, but I want to be clear, we're not talking about Tea Party members per se, because there's been quite a bit of research that's been done on Tea Party members. We're looking at Tea Party supporters. That is to say, people who identify with the Tea Party but who are not necessarily card-carrying members. And
okay.
So our goal was to widen the net, if you will, because there's only about 2% of the population that are voting age who are quote-unquote members of the Tea Party, but we estimate about 22% of the population that are voting age, once again, that actually identify with the Tea Party. And if we look at that in terms of raw numbers, we're talking about 45 million people. So our goal was to go beyond just Tea Party membership and just look at Tea Party identifiers. And what we found was we wanted to see whether or not if it was just politics driving support for the Tea Party or something else. And what we found out is that a lot of it is tied to President Obama and what he represents among Tea Party supporters.
In your book, Professor, you compare the Tea Party to the KKK. It seems like that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, there haven't been lynchings, violence, or cross burnings by Tea Party members.
No, there have not. And quite frankly, you know, we expected a little pushback on that. But what we were trying to illustrate, however, we were trying to illustrate two things. First, we want to make clear that we're comparing the Tea Party to the Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s, which was a national movement, unlike the Klan of the 1900s and unlike the Klan of the late 1950s. Those were regional movements, and they were really closely tied to violence, whereas the Klan of the 1920s was really more about politics than anything else, right? Which is not to say or to deny the violence that was associated with it, because clearly there was some violence. There was a violent element, but it was not the regional movement to which it was tied to violence first and foremost. And so that's kind of one thing I want to illustrate, that we compare them to the Klan of the 1920s. And number two is that the principal purpose for another purpose for comparing them to the Klan of the 1920s is that we wanted to show that the Klan of the 1920s wasn't really a conservative movement, much like we don't think the Tea Party is a conservative movement, and that both violate major tenets of conservatism. The first of which is, you know, a really well-ordered liberal society. So that's sort of one thing, right? They both violate it. And in the way in which the Tea Party violates a stable, well-ordered society is consider the argument over the debt limit a couple years ago. I mean, that had the ability to completely throw the American economy into chaos, causing instability, right? In the same way, although we're talking about you know, in more untraditional and more violent ways, the Klan tried to keep law and order. They thought they were trying to keep law and order, but they did so through extra legal means, right? And so what I'm trying to say is, and what Matt and I are trying to say is that both of these are beyond the bounds of traditional mainstream moderate conservatism. That was the principal basis of comparison.
And you also compared them to the John Birch Society of the 50s and 60s and the Know Nothing movement of the 1800s for the same reasons?
That is correct. So with the John Birch Society, what they tried to do, they considered the civil rights movement a sort of Trojan horse for communism or socialism, if you will, depending upon who we were talking about. And so what happened was they thought the quote unquote Eastern elites were in cahoots with the socialists, right, or the communists from China and the Soviet Union, so much so that they claimed that Dwight Eisenhower, the leader of the invasion of Normandy, was a communist dupe, as was Earl Warren, the chief justice who was responsible for writing the opinion in Brown versus Board of Education.
Do you believe that the emergence and mobilization of the Tea Party was caused solely by the election of President Obama?
I think there was a lot of it. I think a lot of it had to do with that. I think that the sentiment has always been there, has always been latent. But let me backtrack just a moment and just sort of discuss some of the mechanism that sort of underlies this sort of reactionary conservatism that we discuss in the book. Reactionary conservatism, or these extreme right-wing movements, are generally triggered by some sort of rapid social change of some kind. Right. So when we're talking about the Know Nothing Party of the 1850s, you know, it was the immigration of Irish Catholics. When we're talking about the Klan of the 1920s, and once again, we're talking about national right wing movements. So we're talking about the Klan of the 1920s. It was a quote unquote return of the new Negro. It was about this perception that Jews were taking over the financial system, and also, you know, papal influence on American politics. And so when we get to the John Birch Society, once again, change was threatened with the civil rights movement. And so now what happens with President Obama's presidency is that they see change. This represents sort of the browning of America, the sort of displacement of the quote unquote real Americans, who tend to be white, middle class or better, Protestant and straight. Those are the sort of quote-unquote real Americans to which we hear them refer. And the Klan said the same thing. The Know Nothing Party said the same thing.
How do conservative intellectuals feel about the Tea Party?
So that's a really good question. And so let me, from what I gather by reading, more or less, David Brooks doesn't really approve of the Tea Party, nor does David Frum. Most sort of moderate, more mainstream conservatives really don't approve of the Tea Party. But they think they're ripping the Republican Party apart. So when we think about what happened a couple weeks ago with Bob Dole saying that neither he nor President Reagan would have a place in the present Republican Party, that should tell everybody something right there. Now let me back this up with numbers. So what we did was we asked our survey respondents, you know, whether or not they thought Barack Obama is trying to destroy the country, right? It's obviously a very provocative question, but it gets at the sort of paranoia that we're trying to illustrate that underlies reactionary conservatism. And this is what we found. If we look at all conservatives, 36% of all conservatives believe that to be true. However, if we disaggregate it and look at Tea Party conservative versus non-Tea Party conservatives, only 6% of non-Tea Party conservatives believe Barack Obama is trying to destroy the country versus 71% of Tea Party conservatives.
When you conducted your study, how extensive is your research? How many respondents did you have in your study?
We had, in the latest one we conducted in 2011, we had 1,500 respondents in our survey. We surveyed 13 states. And we collected a total of 1,504 completed interviews. But we didn't stop there. We also conducted a content analysis comparing the Tea Party websites, 42 Tea Party websites in 15 states, along with the National Review Online content over the same period. And the content couldn't be any more different than what we could imagine it would be. I mean, it's so the content of the National Review Online, they were mainly concerned with big government. They were mainly concerned with moral values. They were mainly concerned with these, in national defense, these sort of traditionally conservative at least post-war traditionally conservative values, but not the Tea Party websites. You know, they were the ones thinking, calling Obama a communist and socialist and saying that he's going to ruin the country. And so, once again, I mean, our hypotheses were proven correct. So those two hypotheses, those two sources of data or evidence, they overlap and support each other in really interesting and powerful ways.
Did you set out with preconceived notions that you wanted to prove, or was this just objective, impartial research, not influenced by your own feelings about the Tea Party, which I don't know what they are. I'm just presuming that you're not a fan of the Tea Party, but you can, you know, tell me otherwise.
Okay, well, if I can ask, what is the basis of that presumption?
I just wanted to know if there were certain things that you set out to prove before you started this, or if you were just, I mean, why did you conduct the study, I guess is my question.
Well, so first of all, with all due respect, Matt and I are social scientists, and we don't set out to prove anything. Any social scientist worth his or her salt will never set out to prove anything. I mean, all researchers have their own biases to begin with.
Right.
But as social scientists, we have to go where the data takes us. And so what we set out to do is just, let me tell you the origins of this. Maybe that'll clarify my position a little better. So one day I read a newspaper article in the New York Times by Frank Rich, in which he says that Tea Party supporters, you know, ever since, you know, we have this black president and who appointed a quote unquote wise Latina to the Supreme Court, and then we had recently had a female Speaker of the House, that these people seem completely unreasonable. And that's to put a kind sort of euphemistic spin on it. And then I read a couple pieces in the Wall Street Journal, one by Juan Williams and one by Peggy Noonan, who said that they were just angry, but they were really more or less in the mainstream. And I just happened to have some data on that, and I just went and explored it because I needed to know what was closer to the truth. And when I found what I found, and that there was some support for these intolerant attitudes that are associated with Tea Party support, then I launched a completely different survey, you know, to really try to pin this down. So it was really about intellectual inquiry, because, you know, the Tea Party movement has really had a really large impact on American politics over the last 3 years. And I just kind of wanted to have a better understanding what the sources are and what the implications are associated with it.
According to your findings, how widespread is racism among Tea Party sympathizers, let's say?
So if we define racism as we do, as racial resentment, it's about half of the people who support the Tea Party. But let me say this, because, you know, I've, you know, done several of these interviews, and people often say that, suggest that all Tea Party sympathizers are racist or homophobic or xenophobic or sexist, and that's not true. I would never make a categorical assertion like that, because it's simply not true. What we're trying to examine are, you know, the probabilities if you support the Tea Party versus if you do not support the Tea Party, right? Whether or not you're more likely to be. It's not a categorical assessment. It's like whether or not you're more likely than those people who don't support the Tea Party, right, to believe in X, Y, or Z.
Is the Tea Party as important now as when it first created, and also how it affected the 2012 Republican presidential races?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So what's changed about the Tea Party right now, as far as I can tell, is that so during 2010, I mean, so they, you know, claiming they were a reaction against encroaching government and health care reform. Right. So let me just backtrack just for a moment, if you will permit me. Mm-hmm. So when we had when Bush was in office, you know, Bush increased discretionary spending by 50%, and the deficit actually increased by 104% on Bush's watch versus 14% on Clinton's watch. And so, I mean, I can go chapter and verse about all the other things that happened on Bush's watch that are objectively true that supposedly violate the tenets of what the Tea Party has come to be known for. But we didn't see any, we didn't see hide, we saw hide nor hair of the Tea Party on Bush's watch. Now we get Obama in, now we see a month later, then we start seeing all this Tea Party agitation. So let me just say that and just set that to the side. We can return to that at any point during this interview if you wish. Now, the question that's on the table, or the instant question is, whether or not the Tea Party remains important. And they do. In 2010, you know, they were more of a national phenomenon, right? But ever since then, ever since they, you know, did really well in the election cycle in 2010, what happened was they then retreated to the state level, right? They got Scott Walker elected in Wisconsin. They got your governor. They were a big part of getting your governor elected. What's his name? Rick
Scott. Rick Scott.
Rick Scott, they were a big part of his coalition.
And we have right? Alan West as well.
Alan West, but Alan West is gone now.
Right.
He's still sending out
emails all the time.
but what they're doing now, consider all the restrictive sort of voter ID legislations and legislation that's been circulating or that's been, that had been pending, you know, until this latest Supreme Court case. I mean, so you had a Tea Party called True the Vote, a Tea Party related outfit called True the Vote that really helped lobby and rally the troops, you know, in favor of this more restrictive voter ID legislation. And also in Florida, as you guys well know, about restricting the times during which people could get out and vote. It used to be maybe a week, you know, souls to the polls, at least a week or so before the polls open, right? But then they restricted that. I think it was overruled in Florida, was it not?
Well, they've backtracked the latest legislative session, but part of the problem in the election was that the ballot was so lengthy and it made huge lines. A lot of people just gave up and didn't vote.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the Tea Party. So if we look at that, if we look at the quote unquote war on women, where you know we're talking about in Virginia, this whole idea of quote unquote a transvaginal probe. You know, that was championed by, you know, this sort of Tea Party-backed governor in Virginia. And so we look at that. We look at, obviously, immigration reform. Now, let's be real about this and how much the Tea Party has powered, you know, this resistance to immigration reform. In fact, we're going to have the Senate bill that's been kicked to the House, and we'll see how that plays out.
But Marco Rubio is embraced by the Tea Party, isn't he? And he's one of the Gang of Eight that wrote the bill.
Well, he was embraced by the Tea Party when he first came to office,
uh-huh.
Right? But it's not clear. It's not clear that he continues to enjoy their support now, especially given him heading, the immigration bill that's getting ready to head to the House right now. It's not clear that he continues to enjoy their support.
If you'd like to call and join in the conversation about the Tea Party or anything related, the number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. You can email radio at WLRN.org. And we're speaking with Professor Christopher Parker. He's a professor of social justice and political science at the University of Washington, Seattle. And the name of the book is Change They Can't Believe In, The Tea Party and Reactionary, Politics in America.
Comparison of with the Tea Party and the Occupy movement?
You know what, that is a really, really good question. And that's something that I've wrestled with in the past. Well, one sort of comparison that we can make right now is the Tea Party is still a force in American politics and the Occupy movement is, as far as I know, gone. So, but in principle, I mean, so the Occupy movement, really fought against corporate influence and mainly in politics, right? They just really got tired of the corporate influence. Whereas the Tea Party, they have issues when it comes to corporate influence, but the fact of the matter is that a big part of their agenda or some of them's agenda is really about, freedom. And if we're talking about freedom, that also it fits this description that that corporations should be able to do whatever they are allowed to do or permitted to do, within the bounds of the law. And so, and moreover, you have a lot of these folks, who fancy themselves as one day perhaps becoming relatively rich, right? And so they don't want their chances of becoming wealthy at some point infringed upon, or they don't want to have their freedoms trampled upon that will inhibit their ability to perhaps one day become wealthy. So while they don't, while they're not demographically the same as corporate titans or, you know, chief executives, you know, they still want the freedom to be able to pursue their dreams like corporations.
We have an emailer, Andrew. He says he believes the Tea Party is not really a conservative movement within the constitutional paradigm. It's an anti-democratic movement that at its core wants to take the United States back to before the signing of the Constitution. Before the precepts of the United States were established, government was an authority that divvied up resources according to class, social status, race, religious affiliation, and political influence. And he says it was formed by people that more like the paradigm of sharecroppers on southern plantations, appease the ownership class so that when resources are cut for everyone else, you might be spared.
If you're emailing, please keep them
shorter
than
that. Yeah,
keep
it little. Okay, any comment, Professor?
Yeah, I would definitely agree that the Tea Party wants to take us back in time. Okay, so we're all familiar with we want to take our country back. And so what does that mean? Take our country back in time or take our country back from these people who aren't considered to be, quote unquote, real Americans? And our research suggests that both are true. So when we think about Let's think about conservatives, right? Think about more mainstream, moderate conservatives. What do they want to do? Well, they want to conserve something. And, you know, from Burke to Russell Kirk, these folks want to conserve what's good about American society, or not necessarily American society, but any society. But they want to make sure that the institutional infrastructure of society remains stable. And so while they don't necessarily embrace change, right, they don't necessarily want change, they realize change is necessary in order to maintain a stable society. Otherwise, you might get revolution, as Burke wrote against it, the French Revolution, you know, and as Burke is widely recognized as the father of modern conservatism. And so one of his things that he was writing about in the French Revolution was that, you know, maybe some more incremental change should have happened so that we didn't have this revolutionary change. Now, if we look at reactionary conservatives that we discuss in the book, reactionary conservatives don't want change of any kind. They actually want to go back in time to a point during which their social group, whatever the social referent group is, where it enjoyed unquestioned dominance, right? So they want to go back in time. They don't want social progress because social progress for them means displacement. I agree with the emailer.
Okay.
Let's take a call or two. We've got George in Miami. Hi, George.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to talk about the whole Tea Party movement. You know, I participated in one of the events, and I just don't see the fact that it's being, you know, everything's pushed towards race. Everything is pushed towards race. I think that the biggest wake-up point for most Tea Party people was the fact that the federal government has continued to increase our debt limit, continued to increase the debt that this country has taken on, to the point where we're going to become a country that can't afford to pay our debts. And that's where I think we're going towards. And that's what I think the Tea Party movement is really all about. It's not about race. It's more about fiscal conservatism and reducing the amount of money that the federal government spends and keeping their hands out of our pockets, right? Not out of our pockets, out of our cell phones, out of our, you know, emails, because that's what they're doing. I think that's the key.
Professor, I mean, your studies show differently.
Yeah, it definitely shows differently. So Matt and I would never claim that the Tea Party movement or Tea Party supporters are not, at least in part, about fiscal conservatism, but we're arguing that that's really not the whole story. Once again, as I said about 10 minutes ago, we look at what happened with George Bush. I mean, you had someone from, I believe it was a Cato Institute, that called George Bush the biggest spender since LBJ. So where was the Tea Party then? I mean, we didn't see anything remotely close to the Tea Party back then. Moreover, Matt and I would never make the claim that it's all about race, because it's really not all about race. It's also about sexism. It's also about xenophobia. It's also about homophobia. And we have all this evidence in our book. So let me give you a couple examples. I'm glad we got to this point. So if we look at, let's just take same-sex rights. You know, let's just take same-sex rights. And I think this is appropriate now, you know, given the recent Supreme Court decisions on DOMA and Proposition 8. So we asked both Tea Party conservatives and non-Tea Party conservatives, you know, their positions on these issues. So we asked whether or not they thought the gay community was too powerful. 29% of non-Tea Party conservatives believe that to be true. 41% of Tea Party conservatives believe that to be true. And if we look at whether or not same-sex marriage should take place, 37% of non-Tea Party conservatives agree with that, but only 25% of Tea Party conservatives believe that. So there are some tangible differences, and I have a whole lot more stuff that we can discuss, but I just wanted to point out that if it were really about just small government and ideology, we would see no differences in these issues. But Matt and I see vast differences, and not only issues that are relating to same-sex rights, but issues that are relating to immigration, and obviously issues that are relating to President Obama. And let me just say one more thing. When it comes to President Obama, you know, so Tea Party supporters always consider themselves, oh, we're, you know, patriots. Okay. So when we ask a question about whether or not they want President Obama's policies to fail, not just Tea Party people, but the whole sample, but we narrowed it down to Tea Party conservatives and non-Tea Party conservatives. Now listen to this gap. So whether or not you want President Obama's policies to fail, 36% of non-Tea Party conservatives want to see President Obama's policies fail versus 78% of Tea Party conservative policies. You know, they want President Obama's policies to fail. So it's not just about conservatism or ideology. It's much bigger than that.
So you're saying where's the patriotism if 78% of them want the president and his policies to fail?
Exactly, because if the president's policies fail, then on a certain level, America fails.
Right.
Well, they oppose the health care, though, so it seems obvious that they would feel that way, that they want those policies to fail.
But the purpose for which they want these policies to fail have very little to do with politics, and that's what we show in our book, you know, through these statistical analyses. If it were really just about politics, right, if it were just about partisanship or ideology, and that's how we loosely group politics, then the connection between support for the Tea Party and all these policy outputs, there would be no connection. But time and time again, we find that there's a connection that remains even after we account for various and sundry alternative explanations or conventional explanations that are about politics, right? Or that are even about race, because it's not even completely tied to race.
And the name of the book is Change They Can't Believe In, The Tea Party and Reactionary Politics in America. The author, Professor Christopher Parker. And we're going to take a short break on Topical Currents. We'll come back and take some more calls and emails.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Thanks for joining us today. Tune into WLRN TV 17 for Viva Mango, the new documentary which chronicles the passion and even obsession that people have for mangoes. That's airing this Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WLRN TV Channel 17.
Broward College Fort Lauderdale Speaker Series begins its inaugural season at the Broward Center with seven fascinating evenings. Speakers include economist and publisher Steve Forbes, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Bob Woodward, Soledad O'Brien, author Jeanette Walls, oceanographer Jean-Michel Cousteau, and presidential historian Michael Beschloss. Information and subscriptions at the Broward Center at 954-462-0222 or online at fortlauderdaleSpeakerSeries.com.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and University of Washington, Seattle Professor Christopher Parker. He's the co-author of Change They Can't Believe In. Let's take a couple of calls. Our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And next up on the line, we have Dave in Miami. Hi.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. Love your show. I'm a public sector worker, and I have many co-workers who voted straight down the line Tea Party style during the last election cycle, and not to mention the fact that I have a very close relative who was a former public employee who now enjoys a very comfortable retirement thanks to the very types of labor contracts and government interaction, if you will, that the Tea Party opposes. And I don't know, I'm just dumbfounded by this, and I'm wondering what the professor's thoughts are on that phenomenon, and also how much of the Tea Party is actually grassroots and how much of it is astroturf, how much of it is due to the activities of the American Legislative Executive Council and other such organizations. And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Those are very, very good and learned questions. I'll take the last part first, as they say in Jeopardy, I think. So the last part, it's a combination, right? I mean, it certainly doesn't get off the ground, you know, without the funding from Americans for Prosperity. You know, it's associated with the Koch brothers, right? And so, but the listeners should know that the Koch brothers' father was part of Robert Welch's, who founded the John Birch Society, was part of his executive council back in the late 1950s and early 1960s. So this is a family affair. So that there is some continuity there. And yes, there's no way, no how that without, you know, the fundraising of Tea Party Express and American for Prosperity and these other groups, that the Tea Party could really have the power and the influence that it currently has. So, but now, but trying to get to a more sort of empirical question about what percentage is grassroots versus what percentage is astroturf, that's really hard to determine. But it's a combination of both. And so the first part of the question, when it comes to some of the, you know, government workers and even folks who are recipients of Medicare and Social Security, who enjoy the government largesse, but they really don't like government. A lot of that has to do with the fact that these are benefits that are perceived as earned, right? So when they're talking about Medicaid, for example, or welfare, those are benefits that are not earned. But when it comes to Social Security and Medicare, that these are benefits that these people, the recipients, feel like they have paid into, so therefore they deserve it.
We have an emailer, Samuel. Is the Tea Party not a neocon ruse founded by affluent Americans like the Koch brothers so that they may preserve their affluent lifestyles and wealth, or what they say is their American way of life? That's from Sam.
Thank you, Sam. I wouldn't go so far as to call it a neocon ruse per se, but let's just say that there's an identity of interest between people at the grassroots level who are hardcore Tea Party supporters and really wealthy far right industrialists and businessmen and women that help fund these Tea Party activities. So, you know, there's definitely an identity of interest here. Whether or not it's a neocon ruse is a different question.
Let me ask you, what do you think will become of the Tea Party when President Obama's not on the ballot in 2016?
Go ahead.
No, but the country will be even less of what you found they want the country to be, which you said, or the sympathizers, white, Christian, male, middle age, middle class, straight.
Yeah. So demographically, the country is obviously moving away from that, but it won't move. I mean, by 2016, you know, it's not going to move the needle a whole lot because that's only, 3 years from now. So I think there'll still be, barring any, you know, catastrophe, I think a lot of these folks will still be around. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why my colleague and I remain confident that this is a latent identity to which they adhere is that one of my colleagues at Harvard University, Theda Skocpol, showed in her book, Tea Party Republicanism, that, and I'm plugging her book, is that you had some folks who were John Birch Society folks back in the 60s and early 70s, they are Tea Party folks right now. So that suggests that these identities never really go away, but that it takes something in the current political environment to trigger it. Now, having said that, once Obama leaves public office, I think the whole Tea Party fever, my prediction is that it will die down. Now, they'll come back as something else. Let's say Hillary wins the nomination. They'll come back as something else, right? But they won't be the Tea Party anymore, but those people will still be there.
And we'll take another call. This is Andres in Miami. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on, thank you for taking my call, by the way, and I just wanted to comment on the role that reactionary right-wing conservatives such as the Tea Party have in the whole conservative movement as a whole against the progressive movement. I think that for them, I agree with you that for them it's a big social, a jar to their social identity, because the progressive movement and the way that the country is moving now and the issues that they're responding to that were present very much so and even more so than now during the Bush administration didn't affect their social identity. But now that we have a new black, that we have a black president, and now that progressive issues are being pushed a lot further on the agenda, they are losing that identity. And I think movements like theirs spring up every time something like this, some kind of social progress happens. Because the conservative movement and the progressive movement, that is the Democratic and Republican parties, they serve an important role in counteracting one another, in keeping the progressive movement from moving too fast and keeping conservatism from keeping us too far back. But I think more so with the conservative movements such as the Tea Party happen a lot more, because the social framework that they're losing entirely, while the progressive movement and the balancing act that they play with the conservative movement keeps a more slow pace forward, so we don't see as much radicalism on the left. And I just wanted to wonder about your thoughts on that.
Christopher?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. I think you're right. I mean, I think that what happens is, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that President Obama has really hasn't governed as a progressive. So let me just put that out there right now. He really hasn't. He's really compromised, you know, a whole lot in order to get things done, because I think he's a pragmatist first and foremost, but he hasn't really governed as a progressive. Now having said that, I think that's right, because when we think about who the president is, who the president represents to us, you know, from a time we're little kids, we identify with the president as an authority figure from a time we're little kids. We know who the president is when we're in kindergarten, or even right now, sometimes even in preschool. The president is the chief law enforcement officer. The president is the commander in chief. The president is the face of the country. The president is the head of government, right? And so for some people, that interrupts their identification with the country as real Americans, and they just can't handle that, regardless of however the president is governing in this particular case. The fact of the matter is, this is just something that they just cannot handle. And so when we look at President Obama about whether or not, just one couple quick examples, whether or not you think President Obama is a Christian, 42% of non-Tea Party conservatives believe he is, but only 25% of Tea Party conservatives believe he's a Christian, and 52% of non-Tea Party conservatives believe that President Obama is a citizen of the United States and born here, versus only 38% of Tea Party conservatives. So there is something going on here about the way in which Obama makes them feel about their identity, right? In this case, the rapid change happens to be the president and everything he represents.
Just so you can answer this, George is asking if you're sure you're surveying Tea Party supporters and not liberals pretending to be Tea Party and trying to make them look bad.
George, is that a rhetorical question? I just said, with all due respect, George, this wouldn't be George Zimmerman either, would it? You have time to be out like this.
No.
Anyway, with all due respect, George, I'm a social scientist, as is Matt, and we do our job really well, and we take pride in doing our jobs really well. And so this is not some sort of ruse on our part, some means through which we can cook the data to make President Obama or progressives look good.
We're speaking with Professor Christopher Parker. He's written, co-authored, Change They Can't Believe In, The Tea Party and Reactionary Politics in America. He wrote it with Matt Barreto. It's Topical Currents. We'll take a short break. We'll come back, take more calls. Stay with us.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM NPR for the Florida Keys. We're funded by listeners like you and by the Lincoln Motor Company, featuring a panoramic retractable roof on the 2013 Lincoln MKZ that opens up to over 15 square feet of skylight. More at Lincoln.com.
Hi, I'm Robin Young.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson.
We are the hosts of NPR's Here and Now, now heard Monday through Thursday at 2 p.m.
It's a news magazine designed to keep you up to date with the day's news.
And introduce you to amazing people far from the headlines.
It's Here and Now with Jeremy Hobson, that's me.
And Robin Young.
That's her.
Monday through Thursday at 2 p.m. here on South Florida's NPR news station, 91.3 WLRN.
And NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM.
And 46 and a half minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Professor Christopher Parker. Professor, how about a website where people can learn more about you and the book?
You can go to, you can just type my name in, Christopher S. Parker, and comma, University of Washington, and that'll take you to several points at which you can learn more about the book and learn more about the research that underlined the book.
We'll also have a link to the book on our Facebook page and also the WLRN.org.
Homepage, yeah. Professor, I watched a town hall meeting that you conducted with David Dumke, I think was his name,
yes,
from your university, and you were fairly certain that President Obama would not get reelected to a second term. Remember that?
I do remember that.
Does that make you question anything about your feelings about or the fact of racism in America? I mean, he did get reelected largely.
Yeah, he did get reelected, but the issue was that so African Americans turned out at a higher rate than any other group at 66%. There were a good number of whites that decided to sit this one out. So I'm just saying that it makes me feel a little better about racism. But the issue is, to be quite honest, if you look at it empirically through several studies, is that racism has actually gotten worse since President Obama's been in office. And
what makes you say that?
Yeah.
There have been a couple of empirical studies that have been done. One by the General Social Survey. And there's another one by a scholar at Stanford University named Paul Snyderman that was conducted a couple years ago, in which racism, especially anti-black racism, has really gotten worse. I'm not saying it's gotten worse, by a huge amount, but it's gotten slightly worse from about maybe 48%. And I'm talking about the country as a whole. This is not confined to Tea Party supporters. 48% responses that can be considered racist versus now 51%. So we're only talking about a 3% difference, but it has actually gotten worse. Now, as far as my conversation with my colleague David Dumke goes, one of the reasons why I wasn't so sanguine about the president getting reelected is because of what's called the Bradley effect, and that you'll have some people that will claim that they're going to vote for a candidate of color, but they will actually not vote for that candidate, or they will stay at home. And so what happens is the support for the candidate of color, when it is actually overestimated versus what the support is actually going to, that he or she's going to get when the election actually takes place. So I was a bit concerned about that. Right. But my concerns in this particular case were unfounded.
Let's take a call or two. We're getting kind of close to the end of the program, so ask our callers to be brief. Omar in Miramar, hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. I love your show. I'm one of your young listeners, and I have a general question about the Tea Party. The Republicans want the Hispanic vote, and personally, I see that they're rooting for Marco Rubio to run for office in 2016. And more youth Latinos are growing up, turning 18, and that they can vote. Wouldn't the Tea Party just die out?
I would say the Tea Party per se might die out, but in the short term, you're still going to have a good number of these folks who Matt and I identify as reactionary conservatives. They'll still be around in 2016 and 2020. and what, you know, 2018 as well. So they'll still be around in the short term. In the long term, you know, if the Republicans as a party don't fix this problem when it comes to immigration, then it's going to be a huge issue, right? Because Latinos are the fastest growing minority in this country. Now, the issue is they have to become registered and get out there and actually vote. That's the problem, because I think although President Obama got 71% of the Latino vote, I think turnout was barely over 50% of registered Latino voters.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, uh-huh. Thanks for your call.
And did we have an email or Mike? Does the professor have any information on the education level of Tea Party conservatives?
I do. That's a very good question. I do. So when you look at the educational level of Tea Party conservatives versus, or Tea Party supporters versus the population writ large, then it's, so Tea Partiers, about 26% of them have at least a college degree versus about 35% of the rest of the population. Right. So there's, but so they're not as uneducated as some people would have them be. But they're not as quite as well-educated as the rest of the public. However, I will say this, that when it comes to income, there are 25% of Tea Party identifiers make at least $100,000 a year, right, versus 20% of the rest of the population. So they tend to be a little more well-to-do, if slightly less well-educated. Hmm.
And we move along to Chris in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hi, Chris. Hi.
Go ahead.
Professor, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. The question I want to ask, is the Tea Party also concerned about physical conservatism? What is happening in the Obama administration? We have seen a decline in the Bush administration, and the question is, where were the Tea Party people? One, and two, they only support one party? Only the Republican, and when you underline all of that, to me, it is just pointed on one person, and it's the president, because of who he is. Well, I'm not throwing a race in this whole thing, but just go to say we're the Tea Party when President Bush was in power, America was in crisis.
Chris, your telephone connection is really bad. Let me paraphrase. I think what you want to say is, why is the Tea Party only associated with Republicans? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, and where were the Tea Party during the Bush administration when there were so many problems? I was in crisis and all of that. Where were the Tea Party then?
Right.
Okay, and, Professor?
And why are they only supporting one party?
Okay.
Well, so let me say this. That's a very good question. Thank you. So about 60% of people who support the Tea Party identify with the Republican Party. And why they identify with the Republican Party is because, quite frankly, the Republican Party, you know, over the last 40 years has been sliding more and more towards, you know, a ethnically white or racially white dominated male party. So, and those are the folks who generally want to arrest change. So that's number one. Number two, I mentioned this a little earlier in that, you know, I asked the same question. My colleague and I asked the same question based on all the fiscal problems that we were having during the Bush administration. Where were the Tea Party? We didn't see them. Well, my answer is that what we sort of spell out in the book is that it takes something in a current political environment to trigger this disposition of reactionary conservatism. And in this particular case, it was Obama and the change that he represented, right? Or he continues to represent. And with Bush, you know, they didn't perceive any sort of threat to their identity because Bush was one of them.
We're very short on time, Professor Christopher Parker. How about Tea Party politics and the upstaging of conventional Republicans in not only federal, but in state races?
Well, I mean, so in state races, if we're talking about like, you know, the state house and sort of subnational races, you know, just think about, red states, you're going to have, you know, Tea Partiers that are prevalent, and that stuff is going to be a problem. Think about what's happening in Texas. You're having a really big demographic shift in Texas, but what's happening is Tea Partiers, you know, are pushing for this sort of racialized gerrymandering, for one, right? Because they want to restrict the voting rights of, you know, this expanding population of Latinos. And think about what's happening in North Carolina, you know, with sort of restricting the voting rights of African Americans there. And that's all a function of what's happening at the state level, as every 10 years they redraw the district lines. And so that is definitely a problem if this trend continues. And it's going to continue unabated, you know, until we get more Latinos out there voting in the states in which, you know, Latinos are prevalent. And, you know, what we saw what happened in Ohio. Ohio is really a case in point, where you had the more black folks, you know, heard about the Tea Party and them trying to restrict their voting rights. And it was, make no mistake, it was identified with the Tea Party. The more they got out and participated, we can only hope that the same thing happened with Latinos.
Professor,
so that it won't be this anti-democratic movement. Yes.
Professor, we've run out of time. We certainly want to thank you. Christopher Parker, he's the co-author of Change They Can't Believe In, The Tea Party and Reactionary Politics in America. Thank you.
Thanks
very
so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. And that concludes today's edition. Our producer, Richard Ives, technical direction from Caroline Brainer Watts, Paul Leary, online producer, also free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and more info as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is with historian Keith Lowe, author of Savage Continent, which documents the turbulence in Europe after the hostilities of World War II. Some 30 million people had been killed and near anarchy reigned. To the calendar, on this day in 1908, 105 years ago, in Bar Harbor, Maine, the birth of Nelson Rockefeller, New York governor and VP under Gerald Ford. He died in his office of a heart attack in 1979. And on this day, 1942, 71 years ago, Woolworth heiress Barbara Hutton and Cary Grant were married at Lake Arrowhead, California. Dubbed Cash and Carrie, they divorced after 3 years. One more while we consider gallant old soldiers who just fade away. On this day in 1950, 63 years ago, General Douglas MacArthur is named Commander-in-Chief of United Nations Forces in Korea. He was relieved of that command by Harry Truman in April 1951. So we leave with a thought from Barbara Hutton, who inherited $50 million in 1933 and died with just $3,500 in her account in 1979. Quote from Barbara Hutton, "I've never seen a Brinks truck follow a hearse to the cemetery." Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for Here and Now from NPR News.
This is